Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Best Care Anywhere podcast. I, as per usual, am your host, Anthony Marlott, joined, as always, we love him from the top of Fujiyama to the bottom of his sea, Ethan Wilson.
Konnichiwa, Wilson desu. Kyo no episodo no haisha no yo ni. Watashi wa ichodo nihon ni kuto nodito no doitaku arimasen.
You were so right, I was not ready for that. I don't know how to respond to that, because I don't know what you said.
I think I butchered it so badly that nobody will ever actually be able to translate it and figure out what I said, which is probably for the best.
And, man, I have no idea where to go from there, so I'm just going to move on. And joining us for the first time as a guest, you've seen him on Twitter as Chief Smash Forever. He has been guest on other MASH podcasts. He is a collector of MASH memorabilia and, of course, a huge fan of MASH. The sun smiles, the river laughs, but I can't stop loving that man of mine. It's Scott.
Hello, all. Glad to be on the show.
I am so happy to have you. We have been wanting to get you on for a while. And, yeah, welcome. I don't know what else to say.
I have something to say. It's more of a question, though. Collector of MASH memorabilia.
Yes. If you recall, think way back to episode zero, I mentioned that when we announced that the podcast was starting, we got a picture of from one of the people who was going to be listening of all their MASH memorabilia laid out on a queen-size bed.
That's right.
This is them.
And it doesn't even contain it all now.
Oh, no.
It's even more. So, yes, it's a lot.
So, yes, welcome. Glad to have you. There is, before we get too deep into it, I do have to acknowledge that it's been very civil so far. Everyone's been very polite, but we do have a Kansan and a Nebraskan in the call together. I think we need to get NATO involved. We need to get the UN involved. This is a momentous peace moment. Negotiations are happening.
There's no negotiations. This is manifest destiny, motherfucker, and I am manifesting that destiny north.
Oh no. It was going so well.
A couple minutes there.
Yeah, we had a few minutes of blissful ignorance. It was great. Before we get too deep into it, we have some follow-up, some discussion from last week's episode, because believe it or not, Ethan and I somehow managed to have a semi-adult conversation. Shocking.
When?
I know. regarding the marital choices of Henry Blake and the other members of the MASH 477th. Some of the feedback, because we kind of posed the question to the audience, like, what do you think all this? There's a lot of infidelity in the show at the beginning, and it's mostly played for laughs, and how does that, like, compare with our gut feelings on stuff like that? And it got, I don't want to say personal, but it got a little mature in the topic category. So I figured I'd share some of the audience's thoughts on that. DonutEater111 on Twitter says, for the topic of infidelity, I'd say my views depend a bit on the actual circumstances. In general, I can't really say there's a good excuse for it. However, there's a difference between actively choosing to cheat on your spouse regularly and, as Frank Henry and Trapper do, versus being in an emotionally vulnerable position and succumbing to temptation. It's one of the more troubling aspects of these early seasons, in my opinion. Although I believe the early seasons are more true to life for that time period, from what I understand. So yeah, we kind of touched on that, where when it's like the habitual, you're choosing to do it despite knowing it's wrong, it's kind of icky. But as we'll see in future episodes that I think are really well done, there is that kind of emotional vulnerability part to it. So, and if anyone on this cast right now is emotionally vulnerable, it's Henry Blake. I mean, say it like it is. Other comment we got on that is from Stuart Boyles over on Patreon. Infidelity is always bad, but we're humans and we blow it occasionally. Pinpointing an exact reason is like counting stars. I would say loneliness is probably big, and you don't have to have relations with another person to cheat. Sometimes the other person can be a job or hobby. Fair. Fair.
Damn.
Man, we're getting to the core of what it means to be a human.
gonna be a deep one.
But meanwhile, no. let's see what else. So yeah, those are some comments from the previous episode, Henry and Love. Couple things I need to call out right now. Number one, I am absolutely drinking Dr. Pepper from a cognac snifter right now in memory of one David Ogden Stiers. Scott had to do the unfortunate disservice of reminding me that David Ogden Stiers passed away 6 years ago today. So I've just been drinking Dr. Pepper out of a cognac glass and listening to the clarinet quintet in A major on repeat for the last 3 hours. And I'm an emotional wreck. So thank you for that, Scott. Really appreciate it.
I'm sorry I had to bring it to light, but it's you know, it's sad when you have to remember one of the cast going away. And like I said, he is such a great character. He's, I say, my favorite character on the show. Amazing actor.
I hate to do this to you, Ethan, because I know I do it to you frequently on
the
show.
No, you don't. You do not. You revel in it.
I do revel in it. I think David Ogden Stiers' character, Major Winchester, might be my favorite character that was the show's own creation. So, yeah. Unfortunately, we don't get to meet him for another, oh, let's see here, 4 seasons. All right.
Good shot.
Good talk.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah, the last thing I'll mention is Big Booty Daddy called me out on Twitter, and I'm upset about it. Yes, I didn't pay attention about a month and a half ago when we were doing the movie episodes, and I had to retype set the video template for what episode we're on that week. So about 6 of the episodes in season 2 have said season 1 instead of season 2. And I can't go back and fix it because YouTube doesn't let you re-upload video to the same link. So deal with it. It's fine. We're moving on. I've already cried about it. It's okay. On the plus side, that will hopefully not continue to be a problem because now with full-time job and other things, my life is much more stable and I can actually focus and do this a little more professionally than we have been, so yay.
Not if I have anything to say about it.
Yeah,
I
that's
do.
What I was afraid of. But the only other thing, I there was going to be another announcement, but Ethan and I had to have a little bit further conversation. All I will say is, Patreon members, pay attention to the Patreon the next couple weeks. There might be some spicy special announcements just for you guys. So do pay attention.
It's an OnlyFans link.
I think that's best. So, it's not an OnlyFans link. It absolutely will not be that. Nope. Negative Ghost Rider. So, I will mention, before we get into the episode, we mentioned that you have the extensive MASH collection of memorabilia. But you also mentioned that you were in Topeka a couple weeks ago, and I was talking to Ethan. It sounds like I'm going to have to add an extra day or two to my travel itinerary for the great Kansas road trip that I'm planning for next year, because there is something in Topeka that I did not know was in Topeka. Do you want to share what that is, Scott? Cause I was unaware.
Yeah. So, first shout out to, this was on MASH Matters podcast. They kind of brought it up, and I'm about 3 hours away. They're in the Museum of the Kansas National Guard. It's actually right off the base. They actually have a swamp inside the museum, like a full-size swamp recreation. So signposts and everything. Made the three-hour trip. It's a full museum. They have all kinds of military items on it. It's fantastic. Met some people there. Actually, saw me with my MASH shirt on. We're like, hey, obviously a big MASH fan here. Kind of told them about where I'd heard it from and all that. But they have the steel. They've got Hawkeye's robe. They've got hats. Actually, what it was is a person in Florida had built a full-size replica, like in their backyard, basically. Sounds like he spent about $15,000 to get it made. And eventually he just couldn't maintain it. I guess he used to play poker with his friends in there and stuff like that. So the museum bought it for about $3,000. And it was actually given to them by some Kansas residents. And then they put it in there. There's actually, I think it was like one of the generals that helps run it actually was able to meet William Christopher, Jamie Farr.
Cool.
It's amazing. Like I said, as a fanboy of MASH, I geeked out quite a bit, took tons of photos. They'll take my son and wife there. It's definitely worth a stop. Any MASH fan that's, you know, within a couple hours drive, or even to me, it's worth traveling for. Very, very cool. It's free to go in. Museum is completely free. It's open basically every day for, I think, about 6 or 7 hours. They say when you go in there, there's a whole section dedicated to it. And they've got like a full, like little mini replica. They've got the swamp door. I mean, they've actually got a button and you can play and it plays Suicide is Painless while you're in it. They've got a cool write up on the original person who owned it, and everything. But yeah, it was an amazing trip. Like I said, if you guys go up there, let me know. I'll come out and meet you. But it's fantastic.
So I have had the privilege of traveling to Washington, D.C. twice, and both times being able to go to the I forget what the actual like proper name of the museum is, but it's the like American like history museum, but not like history, like culture. Like they have the original C-3PO and R2-D2. They have one of the original like Baldwin steam locomotives from the 1860s. You know, all these like Americana pieces. And there is a huge display. And I stood there as a little like 14-year-old mesmerized by the entire swamp set behind glass. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. And I saw you post about going to this museum in Topeka. And I'm like, okay. One of two things is going to happen when I look at these photos. It's either going to be a really, like, sixth grade presentation. I made a California mission out of sugar cubes. Like, it's the swamp. And it's just, like, a green tent with, like, cots in it and poker chips and cards everywhere. I was so pleased when I looked at the photos and then went to the Google page for the museum and looked at other photos people had taken. This has very clearly been made by someone who loves the show very much and took the time to. It's not a one-to-one like carbon copy, but the attention to detail of having the army issued knit cap that Radar wears sitting on one of the beds, the same like jump seat chair that's sitting next to Hawk, like it's those details where it's like it's not perfect, but someone, like you said, he spent what, $15,000? Probably was finding the specific, that's not necessarily a prop from the show, but that's that same piece of equipment. Like, wow, that I was kind of blown away by how weirdly accurate it is for being a fan-made like reproduction. So
yeah, that's why I say, like I say, if you look at Hawkeye, they've got his robe, they've got his famous blue Hawaiian shirt. Some photos I couldn't get. They had, you know, by Charles's, they had, you know, a recorder. They had his like a actual box that had his initial, you know, his name printed on it, like it would be from the army. I mean, just the amount of detail this person spent putting into this. It wasn't just a let's throw something up and see if we can grab some fans. And it's a true piece. And like I said, they have a hat on top of when you walk in, there's a hat for every character, for Henry, for Margaret, for Potter. They've got like Jamie Farr's nurse's hat. Like when he was wearing the all white, and it's actually autographed by Jamie Farr.
Oh, that's so cool.
I mean, but so I say, like I said, it is worth the time to any fan out there. Everybody there was so nice. Came back and kind of talked to us. We were one of the, there's probably four or five of us in there, because we went on like a random, you know, I think it was a Thursday or Friday, pretty early in the day. But they were very, very, very nice. Came back and even talked to us about it. I got known about a couple of the podcasts, how your guys is and MASH Matters and all those out there. And they were like, oh, we'll go tell our daughters and friends about it. So, but yeah.
Well, if you're listening from the Kansas National Guard Museum, in about a year and a half, look for two really big, awkward-looking dudes in poorly fitted Hawaiian shirts. I think it's worth the extra day in Kansas, dare I say it, to Ethan. They don't make tent-sized Hawaiian. No, actually, they probably do, but. No, I think it's absolutely going to be worth an extra day in Kansas, dare I say it, to visit the Topeka, Kansas National Guard Museum. What do you say, Ethan?
Oh, you don't have a say in this matter. Going.
I mean, it's your state. I was expecting you to, you know, drive me there.
Yeah. You're gonna be handcuffed in the trunk, and you know, I'll make sure that you don't breathe too much carbon monoxide. You can have little carbon monoxide as a treat.
As a treat. Thank you so much.
And then when you get there. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to Topeka. First, let me figure out if I can afford to get to Kansas. Then we'll get to Topeka. But all right. Well, without further ado, I did want to talk about that because that I saw the pictures and it kind of blew my mind. Let's dive in to Season 2, Episode 17. I refuse to let you make this an 8-hour podcast. Season 2, Episode 17, For Want of a Boot, written by Sheldon Keller, directed by Don Weiss. Again, he's back 2 weeks in a row, and it aired January 12th, 1974. Little bit of background on the writer and director. We've seen Sheldon Keller's work before. This is his third of four mashes. He did Dear Dad Again, Radar's Report before this. He has one more after. And as we talked about last week, Don Weiss, this is his seventh of 16 mashes. Some of his previous ones, if you need refreshing, are Trial of Henry Blake, Dear Dad 3, Cowboy, Sticky Wicket, Fred C. Dobbs, among others. So, let's just jump into it. And I'll be honest. When I reach out for people to come on the show, I think I sent a message to four or five people saying, hey, pick three or four episodes that you feel like you could talk about either because you love them or because you hate them. Mostly people chose ones they love. And to be fair, a lot of the same ones got chosen. 5 o'clock Charlie, Deal Me Out, a bunch of these other ones. And I asked you to come on for this one, Scott, because I was a little bit surprised that For Want of a Boot was... Like, you narrowed it down to a list of three or four, and For Want of a Boot was one of them. And that I don't think that's a bad thing. I was just curious. So before we dive into the episode, what are your, like, initial reasons for wanting to talk about this episode?
I guess one of the reasons, I love the, I guess, let's trade something for trade something to trade something to the next person. I just love these MASH episodes, or just in general on TV, where someone's haggling to get something else. I don't know if it's just something that I must have seen it obviously when I'm younger, but it's always been an episode that I've really enjoyed just because, again, it's fun to see Hawkeye start at the first person and eventually go through eight different people to try to just get a pair of boots and see what he's haggling and all the little schemes and all the, if I promise this, I might get that. It's just always been, you know, an episode I've really, really enjoyed. I'm going to say, I know it's probably not everybody's favorite one out there, but even looking at the Twitter reactions, it seemed like there were some people that actually really did enjoy it, which is nice. But I love the idea of characters. And then again, the biggest thing is it also gives you to interact with so many different characters throughout the show. You know what I mean? I mean, like I said, I made a list. It looks like we're going to go through eight different people just to get to the end game here. And see where it ends, obviously. But
spoilers.
Yeah, and I say
you watched the episode, I hope.
Hold on. Allegedly. Let's not go crazy.
So we open on a very cold 4077th. Hawkeye is bundled up as tightly as he can be. Radar is receiving a shipment of supplies, which is, as he says, probably a mistake. 5,000 diapers and 5,000 pairs of rubber pants, which... There's a joke to be made there somewhere. I don't know that I'll let the audience do the mental math to make that work. But yeah, 5,000 diapers, 5,000 pairs of rubber pants.
And we'll see this kind of joke always throughout the rest of the seasons. As you know, there's a lot of these zany orders shipped to the 4077.
I believe at one point they, in the middle of winter, they get an ice cream churn. I think that might be my favorite.
Yeah.
favorite one.
Bermuda shorts and stuff like that. They get all kinds of crazy stuff.
Hawkeye makes it back to the swamp where he and Trapper commiserate about giving a measly sum of money for the war to end. And between the two of them, they come up with $20. I love Trapper's comment of, we can go to 25, but don't tell them that in the beginning. And then we come to the crux of the episode. Hawkeye has been waiting for 3 months to replace his pair of combat boots because there is quite the hole in the bottom of one of them. That is... Props to Hawkeye. He has made it a lot longer than I would have. I probably would have ended someone's life by now.
Well, and he's on his feet. all day.
Yeah.
Well, oh, more yeah. than all day, like double, triple shifts. I would have ended my own life, I think.
This does seem like a very long time for a boot to be able to get even to Korea. 3 months seems extreme.
Mm-hmm. When you know that there's a warehouse somewhere in the south of the peninsula that just has crates of these. Like, again, I mentioned this on previous podcasts. The logistic capacity of the United States to wage war, even in the 50s, was mind-boggling. The mere thought that it would take 3 months to get a single soldier a single pair of boots is mind-bogglingly dumb. But, as the show has shown us, it's the point. It should be very simple for Hawkeye to get a pair of boots, but the army is nothing if not consistently inconsistent. Hawkeye's temporary solution is to plug the hole with one of Frank's birthday cards. I think this is the first of... Do we get multiple Frank birthdays in the show? I know we get this one. I'm trying to think one of the future Be Nice to Frank episodes is a birthday thing.
I don't remember if there is one.
I think this is the first birthday episode because we had, I think in one of the Dear Dad episodes, we had the Frank Gets Drunk, the introduction of Ferret Face.
Yes.
But I don't think we've had a true Frank birthday.
Yeah, because I know the Be Nice to Frank for plot convenience is an episode that trope that gets repeated a couple times. But I do... Yes, we get two Frank birthdays. There's this one, and then... not to spoil, but two characters agree to be nice to Frank for another birthday. And it kind of ends up backfiring. But yeah, so Frank's birthday, an occasion that, you know, it does exist. And, you know, for what it's worth. Oh, shoot. Hang on. Sorry, I had to silence my phone before an alarm went off. Frank comes in. He is less than enthused by Hawkeye and Trapper, as he usually is. He notices that the birthday card is missing, demands to know where it is, and is appalled when he realizes it's under Hawkeye's foot in his boot.
Well, he's honest, I'll give him that. You know,
Hawkeye gave up that card with a lot less complaint than I figured he would have, but, you know, it's fair. You can't take a man's birthday card. That's just rude. It's just uncalled for. So Hawkeye and Trapper decide enough's enough. They're going to start going up the chain and starting with the supply sergeant, Zelmo Zale. That is a name that does exist. This is our first appearance of Zale, I believe. I don't think we've seen him.
I think Mike put that on Twitter. I guess I didn't realize it, but I think this is the first time we see Zale.
So, does he come back? Like, is this the first of several, of many, perhaps? Or?
Ethan, I rarely get to say this. This is the first of, I'll keep it vague, several episodes that Zelmo Zale will occur in. This is not a one-off character. Woo!
Wow, finally.
You can actually spend some time getting to know this character without them being gone the very next one.
Mm-hmm.
Wish they'd started that trend before, but you know what? Beggars can't be choosers.
True, fair. Zelmo Zale, played by Johnny Hamer. This is his first of several MASH episodes. He actually has quite the prolific voice and live action acting career. He's done voice or live action acting for Plastic Man, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Madam's Place, Alvin and the Chipmunks, and Transformers, to name just a few of his credits. So, yeah, he is not one of these, you know, two-bit, showed up for an episode of one thing here and then went and did an episode of another thing here. He had a pretty substantial career, so heck yeah. Way to go, Zale. As we have come to learn with... the army in MASH, they are woefully incompetent when it comes to supplying units with things they actually need, including footwear. Zale put in the request for a boot 3 months ago, right in line with ordering a truss for Captain Milligan, who has already gone home. I hope he had someone else carry his bags line. That's a nice little.
That is a good joke.
And the chain of favors begins as Hawkeye and Trapper are shown the, quote, 10.5 sized hole in Zelmo's teeth. Complaining that he can't get an appointment to see the dentist, and if they would be willing to expedite an appointment with the dentist, he may be able to expedite the 10.5C Charlie boot, or 10.5 Charlie boots. So up the ladder they climb. I am so happy. This is one of my favorite characters of the whole show. This really? Is the third... Let me rephrase. One of my favorite, like, incidental... I hate to say it, Ethan. One-off characters of the show.
I hate you.
I know. This is our third. We're two, not even through the second season. This is the third dentist the camp has had. Dr. Futterman, the closeted Oriental.
I think you mean Futterman-san.
I love everything about this man. I love it. So, we get the interior of his tent slash dentist office, and it is adorned with everything Japanese. You have Japanese prints, statues. He's wearing a kimono, fans. Just, I love him. I love him so much.
Really?
Yeah, he's great. Ethan, do you have thoughts about Dr. Futterman?
I have met many like him.
Not doctors, I don't think you have.
But very obsessed with Japanese culture. And there is a less than polite word for them.
So, Dr. Futterman is played by the incomparable, very well-known, Ethan, I guarantee you've seen him in other things, Michael Lerner. This is his only MASH episode he is in. He is a prolific film and television actor from the 60s all the way up until as recently as 2022. He passed away, sadly, last year. One of those actors that he's not a bit part actor, I would say, but he's, I would say, seldom in the front row, if that makes sense. He is very much a character actor, a comic relief actor. I think the thing that I most recently would made the connection that it was him and Doc, you know, the same actor as Dr. Futterman was the Walter Hobbs's boss in Elf, the guy who's angry that he can't get a book written.
Oh, that's
yeah. Now that I've said that, you're like, oh wait, yeah, that is the same voice and the same guy. But yeah, Michael Lerner, not a mainstream biggest picture on the movie poster actor, but definitely when he's in something, you notice him and he leaves an impression. So Hawkeye and Trapper come in. They greet Dr. Futterman. Konnichiwa, Dr. Futterman-san. The sun smiles, the river laughs. Can't stop loving that man of mine. The banter back and forth between them and Futterman is excellent. But they inform Dr. Futterman that, hey, can you please take a look at Sergeant Zale's teeth? He says he doesn't do cosmetic work. He's got people with actual, like, hurt and damaged mouths, which, again, makes sense. War zone, all sorts of injuries are possible. And his favor for a favor is if they can get him 3 days in Japan, he will get them an appointment for Zale, thus earning Hawkeye his boots. And I love, and Ethan, you mentioned that there are people in the modern day who are infatuated with the Japanese culture to a degree that is
unsettling.
Unsettling. There you go. For lack of a better term.
That was a nervous laugh there, Scott. You have something you'd like to say?
No, I don't. I certainly do not. This is just, yeah, this little exchange between these two, I'm watching it, with the captions on and just, what he's, how he describes Japan and how much he loves it, and you know how he wants to be an underwater dentist and an all night bathhouse. That's one of my favorite lines. This is a great exchange. For one time on MASH, he makes a lasting impression. We'll say that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna come to Dr. Futterman's defense. He is in love with 1950s Japan. Before some of the things you're thinking about, Ethan. I think the man has a genuine love for the culture of Japan.
Yeah. That's fair.
But also he is not ashamed or wanting to hide the fact that he also takes great interest in the girls who dive for pearls. Like he appreciates all aspects of the Japanese culture. And I think he's genuine. I don't think he's
the he's disdain not posing. I have comes from a lot of it from my boxing days. Because that attracted a certain type, with the type of people who the Japanese girls they liked were of a cartoon persuasion.
Yeah.
And that has left me with some prejudices. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm painfully aware of what you mean, Ethan.
Are you?
I love his little... I believe that I was born in Japan and spirited away to East Orange by a dentist whose wife was barren.
That's a good line.
I don't need a lifetime. I just need 3 days. I want to visit a Shinto shrine. I want to see the kabuki. I want to spend the time in evening in the company of a girl that I can think of in years to come when my wife is talking to me.
Yeah, that's the great line. That's the really good one. That's
So in order to get a 3-day pass for Dr. Futterman, they must go to one Colonel Henry Blake. You know him, you love him. As Dr. Futterman says, in the great mouth of life, Henry Blake is but a temporary filling. I want that on a t-shirt. Radar comes in asking Henry to sign some forms. Some nurses want to transfer out because Margaret, Miss Margaret, is on the warpath, and some of the nurses just can't put up with it. And while discussing that with Henry, Radar lets slip that Major Houlihan is planning to send yet another scathing report to the current general of the week about how inefficient and poorly run and yada yada blah blah Henry's command is, which is causing Henry fairly a bit of stress, just a little. Radar learned some of this information, by the way, while listening at the hole in the nurse's showers, a hole that he has been supposed to fix.
For about a week.
Radar. And he also, I love this, he found out about the report Margaret was writing because... I want to make sure I get this, because it was a total accident. He accidentally came upon this piece of paper, so he pressed it with a steam iron and held it to a mirror so he could read the backwards typewriting so that he could read the report that Margaret was writing. Total accident. What an amazing accident.
Yeah, that's pretty
crazy for Radar. It happens to the best of us.
If I had a nickel for every time I found a piece of paper, pressed, ironed it, and held it up to a mirror to be able to read it, I'd have at least 2 nickels.
Well, yeah, it's just one of those things, you know, you're running late for work, you go to walk down the stairs in the morning, and boom, next thing you know...
Confidential information.
Yeah. I think we don't need to dig any further into this.
Uh, incompetent, inefficient, unmilitary. She spelled bungler wrong. No, sir, that's bumbler. Oh, then she spelled it right. And of course, it is as Henry is flustered about this that Hawkeye and Trapper have chosen the worst possible moment to walk in and ask a favor. As Henry says, you can ask me a favor, so as long as you're expecting it to get turned down, then it's the perfect time. So they ask, can Dr. Futterman please get a 3-day pass? Henry says, no, unless they can get Margaret off their back, or off his back, I should say. And that sends them to one Margaret Houlihan, which, we're a couple episodes on now. We've fallen pretty solidly back into bog standard Margaret from our revelations of a couple episodes previous. But Margaret has a very interesting request to stop her report from going to General Mitchell, and that is for them to throw a birthday party for Major Burns. Now, I don't know about you guys. I know there's not a whole lot to do at the MASH unit right now. It's cold. It's, you know, nothing's going on. Would you go to a party for Major Burns just to break the monotony?
I would think you would almost have to, just because it seems like the show either shows they're either crazy busy or apparently they're bored out of their skull most of the time. I think some people would just go for an excuse to drink, even though Frank is not a loved member of the 4077 by any man stretch of the imagination. But you'd be tempted to stay home, though.
It's very tempting to stay home, yes. So yeah, Margaret lays it out on the table. Firstly, you should not torment Frank Burns. They promise to not perform many of the... Every time we hear about the pranks they pull on Frank, they're just mean. Meatloaf in his pajamas. No Meatloaf in his pajamas. No.
What, like you've never meatloafed somebody?
I never say those words in that order ever again. Margaret points out that this will not be good enough and that today is Frank's birthday. I think there should be a party in the mess tent with a big cake and at least 20 people and presents. Which, Margaret, that's kind of a big ask on the same day. Like, people, okay, presents, maybe, but also a cake in that short of notice, you are pressing your advantage, young lady. And don't think I can't see that.
Well, even the presents would be a stretch. I mean, if it's the same night, and where are they going to go? And where are all these nurses and doctors and, you know, staff going to go even find 20 presents is the first thing. And like I said, how are they going to bake a cake so quickly? It is a humongous ask for such a short amount of time, as we'll see Hawkeye protest here to it, even to some degree.
You have to assume that, like, the same, like, 50 gifts get circulated through the camp. Like,
true.
Like, how many times has the bulletproof garter belt been, like, given as a gift among the nurses or something like that?
Yeah, I guess unless somebody gets a pass to Tokyo where they can maybe get some fresh stuff to add to the mix, there's probably not a whole heck of a lot to get around. Because even when we can see outside of the camp, you got Rosie's and a couple buildings that really remain nameless of what might be in them. There's probably not a whole lot of shopping opportunity there and where they're at currently.
So, Ethan, you know what this makes me think of.
Whoa, boy, do I.
So, it's a camp story. every July, whatever week of camp it fell on, July 25th was always Christmas in July. We'd decorate the lodge, the fire marshal really hated us for this, but because it's Christmas in July, you need a Christmas tree. But it's Christmas in July, so you can't have a beautiful, green, healthy fir tree. No, you have to have the most prone to bursting into flame dead pine tree that you can possibly find.
Wrapped in Christmas lights and shotgun shells.
Yeah, wrapped in Christmas lights and essentially garbage.
One year, a fire inspection took place during that week, and the fire marshal walked into the lodge with, I think, Ben, one of the commissioners, just pointed at the tree and said, no.
No. So we chucked it out. We chucked it out on the road, and then a day later when we had the actual Christmas in July celebration, we dragged it back into the lodge. But part of Christmas in July is the white elephant gift exchange. You know, everyone, or Secret Santa, I guess. White elephant implies, here's what I wish they explained better to the staff. A white, and Scott, you're an uninvolved third party who's getting dragged into this conversation against your will.
Oh yeah.
If I told you we are having a Secret Santa gift exchange versus we are having a white elephant gift exchange, are those different in your mind or the same?
I would say they're different. I feel like a Secret Santa, you're going to put a little bit more thought. You might not know who you're going to get, but you usually have an inkling of who you may get, or when you do know, you're going to put some thought. But the white elephant stuff, you might just, I've got this, I'll put it in the pot. Somebody else is going to get it. You might not put the same amount of effort into it, we'll say.
Okay. Yeah, to me, white elephant was gag gift. Like, it's meant to be kind of goofy, like camouflage toilet paper, just kind of silly gifts. Whereas Secret Santa is, hey, you drew this person's name from a hat. It can be funny and silly, but it's supposed to be a little bit more, like, I don't want to say useful, but like not just dumb garbage you found at the dollar store. That's kind of how I've always treated the distinction between the two. Ethan, would you say that's in line or?
Oh yeah, that's a very fair. That's a very fair description.
So I say all that to say most of the staff did not understand the difference between those two. So everyone would get, you know, the rule is if you're going to give it, you only get a gift if you give a gift. So if you're going to participate, you got to, you know, participate. Without fail, at least a quarter of the gifts were t-shirts, bumper stickers, or coffee mugs from the resort across the lake they bribed the motorboat instructor to take them over and buy for them the day of Christmas in July. So, yeah, it was always kind of a sad Christmas in July if you opened the gift and it was the Bear River Resort t-shirt that was two sizes too small for the wrong gender. So yeah, I don't know where Margaret thinks everyone's gonna pull presents out of their backsides, but you know, at least she's trying. She's doing the best for her man. But Hawkeye, however, is vehemently opposed. He is, quote, just run out of hypocrisy. A party for Frank Burns and presents. He will debase himself just so far for a pair of boots. He screams, a party from Frank Burns. Ha! And he steps right out of Margaret's door into an ankle high puddle of mud. And I love the look Hawkeye gets on his face for a second before he says anything. Just the containing of all his rage in that moment. Just the sheer disappointment with everything happening today.
Yeah, I think this really ramps up his want for that boot a lot more. And then just him going through what he's, maybe we'll start with hors d'oeuvres and, you know, hot biscuits and, you know, how can we keep them hot? That's the biggest thing.
And my favorite thing is through all this, Trapper's just kind of standing there, like, just watching Hawkeye suffer. And, like, he's helping. He's going along to try to help Hawkeye. But at the end of the day, he's like, my boots are fine. Like, I'm just here, man. I'm helping, but, you know, this is you. This is all you, baby.
He's got his sidekick, but it doesn't really affect him too much.
Yeah. Like, even while he's explaining that he's coming to terms with the fact he's going to have to throw a party for Frank Burns, Trapper is kind of sitting there, like, nodding and smiling, like, oh, this is going to be fun. I love Trapper. We circle back to Radar, who is, quote, sorting the mail, quote. Breaking, well, he hasn't opened it yet, so he's not breaking federal law, but he's tiptoeing that line. Don't read other people's mail, folks.
Yeah, using that light to see what he can see. I love when he does the tricks later in the series where he can basically almost flick at the letter and pop it open without breaking the seal, per se, and then he can put the letter back in without anybody noticing. Very clever of him.
Professional snoops know that you can just use a lighter or some other form of heat source to moisten the glue enough to peel it back that way and then just reheat it and seal it again. What were we talking about?
For more secrets on committing mail fraud, contact Ethan at...
Anthony, I've read your mail for the last 2 years.
The only pieces of mail I get are the NRA offering me, for the 18th time, the last chance to renew my membership. Okay. Which reminds me, I do need to renew my NRA credentials later tonight. Let me write that down. Actually, I have to do that because I'm planning on teaching shotgun it for a week at Camp Lassen, and I need those certificates. Hang on. You actually were helpful, Ethan. Thank you.
Damn it.
Okay. I will do that right after this. Man, the podcast just witnessed something very wholesome and unique. Ethan genuinely, unintentionally being not a burden. We love it.
Wow. Could you phrase it some other way, perhaps?
Nope. So, Hawkeye and Trapper are trying to get a cake for Frank Burns' party, so naturally they go to Radar. I don't know where they expect Radar to get a cake, but hey, you know?
Okay, I'm gonna hop in and
please,
I'm just gonna say
please
this.
Please do.
I wholeheartedly believe this entire episode could have been avoided if they had just gone to Radar from the get-go.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Why do I have the feeling Radar could have had 8 pairs of 10.5C boots in camp in an hour and a half? And Hawkeye maybe would have to give up like a bottle of booze or something.
This whole thing could have been avoided.
Okay, you know where there's proof for that? Incubator.
Yep.
The whole incubator saga was ended by Radar just going, "Hey, I got one."
Yeah, you're telling me that Radar can get an incubator, but he can't get some military issue 10.5 Charlies? Nah, not buying it.
Yeah, and later in the seasons, you know, he'll get the generator for them. Oh, and he'll say, it's as simple, you just got to call this guy, this guy, and this guy. I could have had 3 here yesterday. You know, it does kind of prove the point that Radar is the true power of the 4077 that can kind of get you anything you want. And like I said, especially for a pair of boots, I don't think you have to move mountains to get those.
And I don't know when they appeared in camp, but there is a non-zero chance that canonically there is an entire crate full of snow boots somewhere in the camp. Spoilers for a future episode, but it is entirely possible that there is an entire crate of boots that no one knows about.
They'll find it one day, but it's going to be a while.
So, yeah, Radar mentions that he doesn't know if he can get one. Trapper makes a very interesting joke, saying that if Radar can help them with this, he will find a cure for shortness. And Radar has a bit of an outburst at that, which, Ethan,
yo,
I don't know if you have remembered me saying this.
I have.
You have? Remember the jokes about Radar's height.
I will.
As we are coming to learn, Radar is a little, just a little, sensitive.
Wow. Okay.
I'm sorry, Gary Berghoff. He's a bit sensitive about the subject of his height. And even Trapper and Hawkeye say, hey, you know we don't mean it. In our hearts, you're 6'2". And Radar reveals that he is a little on edge because of his loneliness. So Hawkeye and Trapper
tempered.
Okay, stop.
Yeah.
So Hawkeye and Trapper again showing their somewhat emotional intelligence, and even Radar gives them a little bit of side eye as they're thinking about this. Hawkeye asks, okay, which one is she? And he says it's Nurse Murphy. The one that's two people taller than you? Yeah. Nurse Mur- Yeah.
Well, and if you look real in real life, actually, I didn't realize it. I just looked it up. But, you know, Wayne Rogers is 6'4". Alan Otto is 6'2". And Mike Farrell is 6'4". So Raider's going to look pretty short comparatively to most people in that height range.
I feel like we talked about this a couple episodes ago. Like, everyone pokes fun at, like, Radar and later Colonel Potter being short. That's not fair. The entire cast is, like, giants.
Yeah, I'm going to say.
Like, even Winchester's, like, 6'2", also, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to say, that's not the average height. I think the average guy, I think, what, is 5'11", so being these guys are all well over 6 feet tall. Yeah, anybody, especially when standing near them, is going to look pretty short.
Sometimes I wish I was 5'11".
How tall are you, Ethan?
6'4", 6'5", somewhere in there.
The fact that I don't see you in person as regularly as I used to, every time you visit, I have to, like, momentarily remind myself, yeah, Ethan big. Ethan tall.
It doesn't really... I don't really think about it that often, but sometimes I have to remind myself when I have odd, like, interactions with people.
Yeah, to put it into perspective, everyone, whenever Ethan surprise visits me at work and comes through the front door of my dad's shop, it's kind of like that scene of Hagrid busting down the door in the first Harry Potter movie. Sorry about that. I say it with love. You know I do.
I don't.
It's love, Ethan.
I try.
It hurts a little bit, but it's love. So, yeah, Hawkeye and Trapper are poking fun at Radar for wanting to go out with a nurse that's, quote, two people taller than him, and saying that, let us find you something in a 32 regular. Work your way up to the men's department.
Bark, 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 mommy.
Radar replies with, he doesn't have time. The medical journal says that a man's best years are between 19 and 25. Right now, I'm at my peak physically. Oh, sorry about that. I'm sorry to hear that. Just,
That's a great...
As a man who is 29 going on 30 at the end of the year, please don't tell me that, Radar.
Well, so to jump in here real quick, so I was watching that Hulu special, and they showed the pilot script. And I guess I never noticed it in all the years. And it shows how they describe the characters. They show Hawkeye is 28.
Ooh, Trapper is... reference. Okay, yes.
So, at the beginning of season one, Hawkeye is considered to be 28. Trapper is 28. And the one that almost I fell out of my chair was, is they show Henry is 48 years old. So there's supposed to be a 20-year difference between Wayne Rogers, Alan Alda, and McLean Stevenson. And obviously, if by the end of the series, which is in real life 3 to 4 years, Alan Alda has almost full gray hair, and obviously is in his 40s at that point. So they always talked about Radar being, you know, 18, 19 years old, Iowa boy. But I guess I had never noticed they had – I thought they were projected to be in their, you know, early, mid-30s. When the show started, but that was pretty shocking to see that. So,
it's always this thing of they look older than they are because they are. They just are older.
Yeah, and I understand.
But it's interesting because it affects how you perceive the characters. Because again, I've always thought that the younger quote unquote doctors are in their like mid 30s, and Henry is a little bit ahead of them in his 40s. Mm-hmm. But I think even in the last episode, they mentioned Henry is 42. So even that, they rolled back a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, to think that Hawkeye in this shot right now canonically is younger than me hurts my brain. especially since I've been watching. No, it's not a I'm getting old thing. It's a I've been watching him since I was 10. So he's always been older than me. And that's not technically true now. Which is just a little weird. But if you look at it from, like the facts of their backstory, they're Hawkeye and Trapper are supposed to be doctors who aren't fresh out of residency. They've done a little bit of work as doctors and surgeons in hospitals. So 28 is about the right age for that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that would be realistic. I mean, it's one of those things too, where, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, Mike Farrell, Alan Alda, you know, Wayne Rogers, those guys, like, they look older, but, you know, it's one of those things too, where Gary Berghoff, as he, you know, as stays in that younger age, as the seasons progress, it's a little bit more noticeable having him try to play a younger character, where I don't think you mm-hmm. notice it quite as much with the main cast. But again, until today, I mean, like I said, I've been watching this for 25 years, and that was the first time I'd seen those ages as what they had originally thought. Now I realize they changed it, but see, that was the original pilot, was just a little bit threw me off today. So
Well, and I'm not going to give too much away here, but I think they use the fact that Gary Berghoff is what he was in his 30s by the time the end of his run on MASH.
Yeah.
And I think they used that to a great advantage when it came time to tell a couple of the storylines for Radar, that they purposely have him without his hat, and you can kind of see he's not balding, but he's kind of like you said, Alan Alda getting gray hair. That can canonically be, I mean, look at pictures of presidents from their first day in office to their last day in office. That's 4 years, but a lot of presidents show the age of that office. I think they use the characters aging at a different rate than the actual actors really well, especially toward the later parts of the series.
I mean, you got to factor in the stress aspect. I mean, like I said, mm-hmm. it's one of those things where your hair, I mean, I started graying probably 34, 35. I mean, I don't have a tons of gray, but I've got it sprinkled throughout my hair now at 38. So it's one of those things where you can imagine the amount of stress these guys and the hours they're working, they could naturally are going to age at a quicker progression just from mm-hmm. the sheer lack of sleep and constant working. So.
Mm-hmm. No. Man, yeah, Hawkeye's younger than me. That blows my mind. It's going to take a minute for me to get over that. But yeah, Radar is adamant that if they can get him a date with Nurse Murphy, he would be willing to get... He'll make a cake happen for Frank's party. So now we're what? We're... This is six steps in? Five or six steps into the tree of decision or favors.
We're on number six, Radar. Then we're going with the nurse, who's the next one on the chain, we'll say.
Yep. Nurse Murphy, played by Suzanne Zenner. This is her first of how many do you want to guess, Ethan?
I am going to guess a whopping one.
Yep, first of one MASH. But
of course. Why?
But she has a very prolific occurrence in 198 episodes of Days of Our Lives.
Good God.
Yeah. So again, good MASH wasn't her thing, but she found another thing. It's all good. And also various other movies and TV shows, but that was the big one. The greatest number of episodes. So yes, Hawkeye and Trapper are telling Nurse Murphy, we got a great guy for you. He's kind of a Gary Cooper-ish type. Well, more ish than Cooper. which I almost all made that Ethan's intro, but I figured it'd be a little mean.
Coward.
Yep. We come to learn that Nurse Murphy really doesn't care who her date is, so long as she gets something out of it. And the thing she wants is a hairdryer. And she jokes that she'd even be willing to go out with Radar O'Reilly if she could get a hairdryer, which convenient for her, I guess, because that's the scenario. So they go to the only member of camp who has a hairdryer at the moment, which is kind of funny, because I'm pretty sure we see the same hairdryer in the possession of like three different people throughout the show. So again, lending credence to my theory that things get traded and gifted inside the camp over and over again. Corporal Max Klinger, of course, is the one with a full electric hairdryer in his tent. Which opens up the whole Pandora's box of why does Klinger have a tent to himself? Don't ask questions. Don't overthink it. Just let it happen.
Yes, I was just about to bring that up.
I think that has a pretty realistic explanation.
What, that he has a tent to himself?
Yes.
Why? He's a corporal. Why does he get a tent to himself, not a bunk room with like five other people?
Well, I'd imagine in trying to get out on a psycho discharge, he's actually made a decent number of people not want to bunk with him.
You know, fair.
That is a good point, actually. I didn't even think about that.
I'm just going to say it. I know he gets a lot of jokes, but I wonder if some of the enlisted have said, I am not sharing a tent with that one. Well, Last time I saw him putting mayonnaise in the toaster oven.
Oh, no.
Or whatever, I don't know, whatever else.
Whatever he does.
What do you think he does when he's not wearing high heels and walking around with M1 brands?
He, as we'll come to learn, he makes his own outfits.
The Klinger Collection. It will get lots of praise.
The Klinger Collection. Oh, yeah.
I want you to imagine
this. Praise throughout the years.
You have just come back from guard duty. 12 hours standing on the edge of camp. You're dead tired. You walk in and you lie down in your bunk. And your eyes aren't even closed before you hear a sewing machine rattling away at the other end of the tent.
Hence why Klinger probably lives alone. I think we only ever see him with a tent mate one time. Now that I'm thinking about it.
I can definitely think of that episode for sure. I guess he has two if you count Mr. Sock.
Yeah, Mr. Sock is... Well, and Mr. Toe.
What the fuck?
I love doing that to Ethan. He has no concept of what we're talking about.
I hate you guys.
No spoilers, Ethan. No spoilers. Don't worry about it.
No spoilers. Don't worry. Don't you worry your pretty little head.
I don't think I'll ever be able to see a scene with Corporal Klinger without thinking of that iconic line. Hey, up close, you're a girl. Or up close, you're a
guy. Up close, you're a guy. Far away, too. So they offer Klinger. They offer to buy the hairdryer of Klinger. He says, no chance. Hawkeye increases his bid from $75 to $100 plus a nose job. Klinger is offended at the suggestion that his nose is too big, and Hawkeye says, not at all. I'll make it bigger if you want. I'll make you a nose that needs a tie clip. I just need your hair dryer.
Is that a little bit of foreshadowing? Is that a little,
Oh, shut up, Ethan.
Yeah.
I hate you so much. Yeah. I hate everything about you. You just did it to me in reverse. I forgot that's our next episode.
You sound screw like you. My shrink.
Klinger mentions that there's only one thing he wants and everyone knows what it is. Obviously implying to the Section 8 discharge. Hawkeye and Trapper mention it is not in their purview to do that. But Klinger has done his homework. He needs four officers' signatures. They've got Hawkeye and Trapper. I'm assuming if they're on board, Henry's on board. They just need either Burns or Houlihan. Trapper's on board. He says he'd sign papers certifying Klinger as an English sheepdog, which I love that. But now it's come full circle. They need to, and Klinger realizes that they have to get Frank to sign the paperwork. So they're hedging their bets on the fact that Frank is going to be so happy during his party that he might just throw caution to the wind and sign Section 8 papers for Klinger, which, bold strategy. Let's see how it plays out. Oh, God. And now we get the intimate birthday gathering in Margaret's tent for Frank. She has gotten him a gift. The first occurrence of a fine leather item being gifted to someone. Margaret has given Frank her father's old riding crop that her mother gave to her father on their wedding night, which... I don't think this is the first one, but the number of wedding night gifts that Margaret mentions between her father and her mother are insane. I believe so far...
Our military-based, weapon-based, they're... They roll out the carpet for each other that night, apparently.
Yeah, just for off the top of my head, I believe there's a flask, a riding crop, and like a little four-shot 45 caliber pistol, like a muff pistol, which
will be used in a later episode. But yes,
what a wedding! That's all I have to say.
My wife did not give me any of those when we got married. I can tell you that. I'm going to have to talk to her tomorrow morning and see what's going on here.
Frank makes it all of 8 seconds before whacking Margaret on the backside with the riding crop. You know?
Yeah. What else are you supposed to do with it?
You're not wrong. Now, I hate to say it. I'm going to empathize with Frank Burns a little bit.
I don't
know what time of year it is in Mashland, but it's clearly cold and they're in the northern latitude, so probably winter. I don't know if it's December, but as someone with a December birthday, whose birthday usually fell on or right as the Christmas holidays were starting for school, the sentence, "My mother used to send out 30 birthday invitations just to get 4 kids to show up," hits a little hard. just a smidge too real for Anthony there. So I kind of empathize with Frank a little bit. Like, yeah. Really sucks when you know how many people you invited and see how many people actually showed up to your birthday. But I have a feeling that mine was more based on the time of year and Frank's is more based on the everything about him. So I don't feel too bad.
Yeah, well, his might be a little more character based on this side.
Yeah, I mean, you're on a military complex. You've got literally a captive audience. Like, I'm sure the people you invited were not forced to be around you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm. If I may make a suggestion to December birthdays out there, or particularly the parents of a December birthday, particularly if it falls, like, not necessarily close to, but getting close to Christmas, I'm a December 11th birthday, so exactly 2 weeks before. Don't try to do big party, because almost always you're going to have other people who are like, oh, I'm skiing, oh, I'm traveling to go visit family, da-da-da-da-da. Push whatever celebration you're going to do off to the week between Christmas and New Year's, because most people usually don't have something going on. And instead of trying to do like a big party with a bunch of people, pick like 4 or 5 close friends and go do like a specific thing. Like for me, it was usually like bowling or going down to like the Sunsplash Arcade. Like that, it's so much easier to coordinate between like 3 or 4 or 5 people to go do one thing during the time they're all off school and work than trying to get a bunch of people to show up for like a party. December birthday tips, courtesy of Anthony. There you go. God bless. Unless you're someone like Frank Burns, then there is no helping you. There you go. Frank mentions that he got thank you notes from people that he said he'd never see again, which that's just...
That is an awesome line. Mary Linville, though, I mean, compliments to him. I mean, for the role he had to play for those, you know, you still felt bad for him sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, even though he was unlikable and he played the bigot, the racist, the everything bad, you know, in a person... sometimes he's still, you know, you still had times where you were like, you know what, Frank as a character doesn't always deserve that. Especially when he opens up about some of his childhood stuff and all that, you really wish they would have been able to expand the character, like they would later do for Margaret and everybody else throughout this series, just to see what he could have really done. He was a great actor in this role.
Yeah. So Margaret says, well, you know what, Frank, we're going to go to the mess tent and have a dinner, just the two of us. And does, I love the image of Margaret doing this, talking to Frank while flapping the window shade on her tent up and down to signal. Like, I love it. Just the two of us, flap, flap, flap. They wander across. Everyone's hiding in the mess tent, waiting for Frank. They surprise him when he comes in and start handing out drinks and presents, and Frank gets up to give a semi-awkward speech. And again, very rarely do I defend Frank Burns, but, like, man, I do feel a little bad because Frank, for a minute, was like, oh, they like me. They actually like me. And, like we said, mostly an excuse to drink and go do something. But still, to Frank's mind, like, these people are here for me, at least a little bit. And as he alluded to moments ago, that's not a thing he's used to. So I do feel a little bad when it all unravels on him. Just a tiny bit. He probably deserves it, but, like, come on. It's his birthday. Can we give him a little bit of slack?
Just a couple hours would be good for him, I think. You know, Margaret's put the effort in, so it'd be nice if he could get, even for just for a couple minutes, to have that enjoyment of his birthday. Everybody likes to have a good birthday, so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the couple times we'll see where Hawkeye and Trapper, or later Hawkeye and BJ, do kind of buddy up to him a little bit. Like, he starts to mellow out a tiny bit. But by the time some of those incidents happen, he's already too far gone, I think. But yeah, there's better times and places to discuss Frank Burns as a character and Larry Linville as an actor. And I can't wait for them, because there are some really good episodes for Larry Linville. But man, Frank, I do feel bad for you sometimes. You bring a lot of it on yourself, but I do feel bad for you. So Frank is, we see everyone interacting at the party. You hear kind of the asides and people alluding to the various promises. You know, Frank is opening presents. Henry is mentioning to the nurse, like, oh, Major Houlihan's going to be one, you know, cool cucumber after this. Margaret and Pierce mention, oh, you know, a deal's a deal. Radar's getting ready for his date. Zale is talking to Futterman. What nonsense does Futterman say to Zale during all this? Tomorrow morning, Doc, in regards to my teeth, the dawn awakens the soul. The soul summons the spirit.
What is that? What the fuck does that mean?
Hey, Ethan, I would like to make a request for a future merch item.
Yeah.
Can we please have, like, the Japanese woodblock print of the, like, ocean waves with this quote in beautiful calligraphy over it?
Yeah. Yeah, we can. But I'm going to tell you right now that in whatever, what's the term? Calligraphy, kanji, whatever it's called, it's going to say under it, what the fuck does it mean?
So some of the gifts Frank gets, let's see here. Boop, 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 boop. Where are we at here?
Lead-lined jockey shorts.
Lead-lined jockey shorts. Which is a choice. And I do believe, does he also get the specimen bottle? The specimen Stein.
Oh, Stein, that's what it is.
Which is, yeah, it's basically they picked a piece of lab equipment for him to drink out of for the evening. Okay. They went to the, as we mentioned with Jared so long ago, they went to the science room, got a science thing, and he's drinking from it. And then Hawkeye and Trapper, maybe a little too prematurely, they probably could have let Frank get a little drunker. As the cake is being getting ready to be cut, they ask Frank, oh, do you want to spread the joy? And Frank is so happy, and this is why I feel a little bad for him. He's in such a good mood. He feels like people actually care about him. and they ask him to sign the Section 8, and the House of Cards comes tumbling down. Frank absolutely will not sign the Section 8. Klinger sees this and stomps out of the room. Just in time to interrupt, or just in time to grab the hairdryer from Nurse Murphy, right before Radargate gets there for his date, to which she says, "You're not my date unless you plug yourself in and blow on my hair," which, Jesus, lady. What a
damn, just... now that's an offer.
I will also point out, because this will be pertinent in an episode in the near future, Radar is in fact wearing the paratrooper scarf again.
Oh my goodness.
The paratrooper scarf comes out when Radar is on the prowl, as Mike Jameson put it.
On the prowl.
God, I hate that so much.
God is my co-pilot, and we are cruising for Poontang.
No. God. Anyway, so Radar storms off. Margaret's trying to get Frank to cut the cake now that everything's starting to get awkward. Radar rolls the cake away in a fit of rage. Henry is drunk. Margaret is threatening to write a report. Dr. Futterman, if Dr. Futterman had just not come up to try to talk to Henry right now, it might have been okay. He thanks him for the 3-day pass. Henry tears up the pass, and I love Dr. Futterman standing there looking at the ripped up pass on the floor, and he's just like, "Where did I lose control? What happened?"
Yeah, it's fun to watch all the characters and see all their dreams and aspirations of all these things they wanted just fall apart right in front of them in such a quick amount of time. The ripple effect is quite severe across this.
Futterman tells Zale, "Forget it. Learn how to gum your food. I'm not going in your mouth unless it's on fire."
Jesus Christ.
Hawkeye and Trapper try to call. "We appeal to you as a doctor. We're sorry about Pearl Harbor. It'll never happen again." Just. And finally, Hawkeye has had enough, and he just loses his mind. Starts screaming, "Azale, do you understand what I did? How I degraded myself?" This is very not Hawkeye, but I love the line read by Alan Alda. "Do you understand how I've degraded myself? How I've humbled and cheapened myself for a pair of miserable, lousy army boots? I swear, as dedicated as I am to the sanctity and preservation of human life, if I had a gun right now, I would send my head across the tent." I love that so much. I have been tempted to whip that monologue out in fits of frustration, but I feel like the way it ends is a little too hard for some people. I feel like they'd look at me like I was genuinely insane. But God, I love that. Just the.
And then I love the Zale line where he goes, "Yeah, you're waiting for a gun. There's a 6-week wait. There's a lot of people who want it right now." And I guess if he's asking for the gun to shoot himself.
There's a tremendous waiting list. So we see that Hawkeye rambles back through the, "Well, what if we got the dentist a 3-day pass, but then we'd have to get him a date with the hairdryer?" And he's at a loss for what to do now. And we end the episode. They're lazing about in the tent. Trapper mentions it's just about dinner time. Hawkeye doesn't want to go. Trapper mentions they're tough breaking in. "Well, you got to start sometime. Come on." And we see that Hawkeye has replaced his boot with his golf club bag. And I don't think I realized exactly what that was for a long time. But it's...
Desperate men do desperate things.
Because you know his feet are crammed in the bottom of that thing. Or his foot is crammed in the bottom of that thing.
Well, yeah, because it's all the same size. So yeah, if he has a bigger foot, it's not going to fit. So
yeah, no me gusta. I don't like that. But that is for want of a boot. Gentlemen, that was quite the episode. What again, not a plot heavy character building episode, but still a fun one nonetheless. What are your guys' thoughts, feelings, opinions, emotions, all that jazz?
I can go first here. I guess I enjoyed the episode. I love the watching. I think the ultimate payoff is it all falling apart, sadly. But it just, again, you're not developing the characters. We're not going forward in the total MASH story. But just, I think Alan Alda is great in it. Yeah, just again, some of those lines he says, the interaction with all the characters. Good thing is Alan Alda finally got those boots, and that's one of the things he took away from the show. So those 10 and a half C's, he actually kept those until he sold them. So at least he got to get a long life out of them. I know when my dad got out of Vietnam, when he was in the Army, he kept his boots too. So I guess those are very comfortable long term. But overall, good episode. Again, not deep by any stretch, but a lot of funny lines, a lot of memorable short term characters too. So that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Ethan, what about you, my guy?
I feel like this is a lot of people's like a comfort episode.
I would agree. Good,
just shut your brain off, kind of have some laughs and watch everything unfold. Do you think that's fair, Scott?
Yeah, like I said, I think you might have talked about this too, and I've seen other people talk about it on other podcasts, MASH ones, but like season 1 through 3 to me is kind of one of those. Yeah, there's a lot of comfort. I mean, there is sometimes they hear the bullet. There's some other ones that are, are heavier. But it's a great just kind of like, get off work, come home. You just want to flip something on while you're watching or doing something else, or have something in the background. Just a great episode. It's got the laughs. A lot of these laughs, like I said, even when you've seen them 30, 40, 50 times, they still are good. And you don't have to really be super invested. So if something comes off, you can easily come out of the room and know that, hey, this is the natural progression. They're going to go next person and next person and next person. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The funny thing about this is I think coming into this episode, I kind of had it in my brain. It kind of gets lumped together with, I think we get 3 or 4 or 5 of these favor for a favor for a favor type episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one in particular that just, I think it is that season 1 through 3 can pull it off because it's a little bit more lighthearted, a little bit more fun. And they try to do a favor for a favor episode in the later seasons with the different characters, and just something about it doesn't hit right. It's almost beat for beat the same situation, but I don't know. I like this one a lot better than the other one. Do you know the episode I'm referring to? I genuinely, this is probably the other episode, the later season one, I forget exists until I watch it. Like, I genuinely have forgotten that episode. Like, I've seen the episode and been like, wait, have I seen this episode? Because I forget that it's a thing, but...
I agree. I think that's, it's one of those things where after, this goes on for 11 years, this 11-year running show, which doesn't spoil anything, but it's one of those things, like, you can only tell the story so many times. Mm-hmm. I said, I think this cast, this core cast with Rain Rogers, McClane Stevenson, with these people, there's certain stuff that just makes sense for these 3 seasons that as you keep progressing between, 1 through 3, 4 through 6, and 7 through 11, which I guess are the 3 sections of MASH, your fans kind of refer to them, they don't all always work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I agree. This kind of episode is shown throughout multiple times, but this is the most lighthearted and just like I said, just funner of them to watch. Because you get a Henry, you get Trappers in it a lot, you get all the main guys you love in these first 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then and as we get deeper into the show, especially going into next season and season 4. We'll start to see that transition of there's a lot of season 1 through 3 episodes that you couldn't, as we see, you cannot translate to the later seasons because just the cast's energy or vibe is different. But then again, mm-hmm. there's a lot of the later season episodes that you couldn't have made in seasons 1 through 3 because it would come off as disingenuous. It would be the vibe of the early season cast isn't quite right to do those episodes. So Again, yeah, one of the things I love about MASH is the breadth of emotions, for lack of a better term, that the show can touch on. But we're getting really deep for an episode where I still have a screenshot of Alan Alda walking with a golf bag on his leg. So,
well, it is. It's the show. Like I said, as we keep progressing, these casts just aren't all interchangeable. You know what I mean? That you can change out the characters, but the flow of the show. And Ethan, as you will see later down the road, it grows in a positive way. But there's some stuff where, yeah, if you tried to put Colonel Henry Blake in something that was going to be run by the next colonel, it would not be the same thing. So,
And we mentioned it before the show. I want to take a pause here real quick before we get to the ratings. You mentioned it to us before the show, but it wasn't formally in the episode. And it is our mission to ask you as a guest. When and how and why did you start watching MASH, and what have been your kind of big takeaways from the show?
So I went over to a friend's house back in the day. He, you know, his dad had watched it. I think I've watched him, you know, it was on, I probably watched my parents, but I remember watching it with him. And then I just remember getting kind of hooked on it. And then I started probably really watching it most heavily back, like, you know, in the summers when I was in middle school, I was home. I used to, again, before binging was binging, they used to show this on FX and a couple other stations. And I know, like, hey, it's on from 10 to 11, then it's on at 2 to 3, then it's on at 6 to 7, and I would watch them throughout the day, but I had to watch them randomly. You know, there wasn't DVDs yet.
Mm-hmm. You're planning your day around when MASH is on.
It was, you know, and I was home. So, you know, I'm an only child, you know, I was home by myself or whatever. As I got older, so I'd watch those, and then I remember the DVDs coming out one by one. So I have all 11 seasons individually. Then I got Martinis and Medicine, and now it's on Hulu, which, you know, HD. But it's just one of those shows that, to me, I don't know what it is, but it's so deeply connected to me. Like it's brought me so much joy. It's just the characters. I mean, it's almost like, this maybe sounds crazy, but like it's almost like a family, you know what I mean? You're so connected. I've seen them so many times, and even though they're characters, you know, and these are real people outside of this, it's just something that as I've watched it, it's always been there for me. Good, bad, just, you know, when I want to come home, I could spend a day. I remember just when I was younger, I would just hit play on a disc and just run all day. I all day long. I watched it all day and do other stuff. And like I told you guys earlier, like, say, as I've gotten older, and me watching this when I was 15, then in my 20s, then I got married, and then I had a kid, and then I've gotten older. It just, you appreciate stuff. You don't see certain stuff the first time, or it doesn't hit you because you're not a dad at that point. You're not married at that point. You love the hijinks. You love the womanizer and Hawkeye. I mean, everybody loves Hawkeye. I think that's the ultimate character from this. But Winchester, like, I really love Frasier too. Like, I love that kind of humor, highbrow. Like, it's long-winded there, but this is the reason I've enjoyed MASH so much. But yeah, I started, you know, like I say, probably about 25 years ago, and I don't think I've ever gotten tired. There's been some times where I've taken, you know, a couple months off where I've kind of let myself refresh so I can watch episodes a little bit more fresh. I've seen them so many times, but I can always go back to that well.
Yeah, I've kind of put off my yearly sprint through the series because we've been doing the podcast, and it's like, it feels weird. I feel bad because I'll watch like season six, seven, and eight episodes, and I'll be like, man, I really want to talk about these episodes, but I gotta wait another 6 years. But no, like I've said before, being able to watch the show kind of at that, not the once a week pace, but that you get one season per year kind of pace that we have been, has been really, again, I've said it before on the show, it's made me kind of stop and appreciate and kind of pull these, even if they weren't really intended, kind of like these deeper threads that are in the show. So,
yeah, I have all I literally have all my notes from, you know, the two MASH casts and this. Like, if you guys could see, I have a whole sheet I've wrote. I wrote out all the little details. I mean, it's something that we're now, like, the three episodes that I've now been able to be on, which I'm very lucky to have done, like, they made more now because I've had to look at the finer details and the little pieces, and I've looked at the sets and try to look at some of that stuff that, you know, as a casual, when I've watched it even the last 30 or 40 times, I never even came past my view. And now it's like, oh yeah, I saw that joke, or I missed that, or oh, I didn't see that in the background. So Yeah, it makes it, it actually makes them a better episode because you can really focus on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I have no problem, as you and the audience have heard, I have no problem delving, divining deeper meaning than maybe there was ever intended to be in things, because I think, like you said, after having watched the show so much, you pick up on things that, again, probably weren't intended to be picked up on, or even intended to be something to be picked up on, but at some point, and I think MASH is one of those franchises, and also I just finished my once a year audiobook binge of the Harry Potter series, and those MASH and Harry Potter are unique for me in that despite knowing the stories and the arcs and the characters, there's always something new, there's always some deeper understanding you get each time you go through it, and you're like, oh, I appreciate this character, like you said, I'm in a different spot in my life and this applies or this doesn't apply anymore, I can look at this in a new light. So
yeah, and I think that's what sparked some of my fandom as far as collecting items, like getting, you know, being able to have all, I have all the characters, all the little figures, I have all the glasses, I have so much stuff, but then being able to find some of those one-offs, like I said, I think I've talked about it on all my other two, but like, you know, having David Ogdenstier's actual script, like I have his actual script that's autographed by him and it has all his notes, like that to
for
me
which,
is
which
like,
episode it, is that? That you have the script for?
I think it's No Laughing Matter. It's season 8. It's a ways out for you, for me, for you guys. But
which episode is No Laughing Matter? That's oh, why can't I think of what episode that is? I'm usually good at this.
Yeah, even I can't think of it off the top of my head. I know it, but I can't. I get it. There's one that I get it mixed up with, but I was able to get it from, you know, a guy. His dad was the ranger on the set. Like he was the actually worked in the park.
Oh, that's so cool.
And I actually have his dad's Polaroids of the actual fire that occurred. And then I have behind the scenes photos. I've got their sheets, you know, their actual dress rehearsal sheets. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, I was able to get it, and it was just, you know, he was able to give me some more context. This was even through eBay. I mean, this was just a simple, he listed on eBay, but I was able to, hey, how'd you get this? And just some of the, sounds like his family became friends with William Christopher and David Ogdenstier, so they would hang out when they weren't shooting. Oh. And that's how I was able to, you know, but it's one of those things, like it's my most prized possession that I have. Oh. And it's just something where, you know, to be able to see his notes and actually see him cross out lines, circle this, put in, well, you know, some of his own thoughts, like that was, it's just amazing.
We are absolutely having you back in 6.5 years to glean, for you to share some of the personal musings in the margins from that episode from
it's
David. So
yeah, it's pretty amazing. That's like when you hear about like the MASH historian. I know you guys talked about him too. It's, you know,
I want to get him on an episode.
The stuff that he has, I mean, it's just, I can't even fathom it. I've been able to get a couple, like, you know, promotional pieces and like stuff that's not, you know, readily available that was made in mass production, but even that's few and far between. So
I would kill to have a not beat to bejesus Bachman train set, because I know they made a MASH train set and I need need it. But yeah, all the ones I've ever seen are just beat to crap.
Yeah, they made a huge play set at one point, and it's like you can get it on eBay for about $400 or $500. It was actually like a car trading show. We thought it was something else, and we ended up going for like an antique show in where they were selling like Hot Wheels and stuff like that, and a guy had it. But it was missing almost everything, and it was so old, and the, you know, plastic was cracking, but it was the only time I'd ever seen one in the wild, as I say, because like I said, I've had to amass most of my stuff through eBay, because again, the show is 50 years old, so, you know, most people have heard of the show, but, you know, nobody's selling it anywhere, and I've gone all over the country trying to find stuff, and it's still hard to get. So yeah, every time I see him post something on that, on his, you know, website or on Twitter about what he's been able to do, and when he was able to go to the Smithsonian and get behind the scenes, it was like, oh, I probably would have cried if I was I've been so excited.
I won't lie, I as a 14-year-old I got a little emotional in the middle of the American History Museum.
I have the Binding Up the Wounds Smithsonian program, like I have that. I was able to get that years and years ago. But that's all I have. You know, I can read through that and look at it, but it still doesn't give you the true ability. I mean, yeah, I've told my wife, I'm hoping to get out to, I know that they put the one of the original, I think three they made signposts on there, and I'm desperate to get out there to be able to see that in person, just so I can
that,
be close
that is
to it.
One of our, that is one of our eventual pilgrimages. Ethan and I are eventually going to make a pilgrimage down to the Malibu Creek State Park. We just have to get up the nerve to. We just have to get up the nerve to want to go to Southern California.
When the Impala gets running this summer, and I take a road trip out there, we'll have a discussion.
Excellent. Yeah, that's my goal for my. It's almost for my 40th birthday. That's still my. We're going to Malibu. We're gonna go there. We're going to the State Park. I want to see that as my 40th birthday present to myself, and go back out to California.
Anthony, you sometimes refer to the 4 a.m. friend. You are my Southern California friend.
Oh, I good. I'm the one.
Very few people in this world that would ever get me to go anywhere fucking close to Los Angeles.
If we do it right, we don't even have to go into Los Angeles. We can stay somewhere on the north side of the Grapevine and then go to.
Oh, that would be awesome. That'd be
now, the only two bits of MASH memorabilia I've gotten my hands on is I was walking through one of the big antique shops in my area and found the. It's absolutely like a. He signed a bunch of them for a thing, and one of them made its way to this antique shop. It's a Alan Alda leaning on the signpost that he signed, and it has a. I just so happened in another booth in this antique shop to find a. Patch, a green patch with the Bell 47 helicopter. It says MASH 4077, so that's in the frame with it. And then I think I did it all a whole 1 week in a row back when the podcast started. I was gonna pull the trivia cards and post a trivia question.
Yeah, I got those. I've got those
too. The MASH trivia set. I'm missing one card, and it's the 15 point value card that sits on one of the stacks. That's it.
See,
all the other stuff's there.
I've got mine. Mine are sealed. Like, they're still in their plastic.
Oh.
I don't. I have that.
I know.
That.
Damn.
I have the MASH game board, like the actual game board. My son found it in a brass armadillo in Kansas City. I've been looking for it for like 10 to 15 years, and he just goes, "Hey, Daddy, that." And I'm like, so, yeah, they've got some stuff like I don't even want to open. You know what I mean? It's like I've got some original, original MASH poster from like 1976. some stuff that I've got the little MASH lighter, like an actual lighter they put out as like a promo item.
It's one of those things that like you don't think about it because the show's that old. But like MASH was a phenomenon. Like they made merch for this show, which is mind-boggling to think about. But they did, and some of the stuff they made is ridiculous, and I love it. But I was just gonna say. Ethan, do you now understand why both of us would pay any amount of money to be able to watch the show for the first time again?
I mean, seriously, it's I'm very happy for you, man. It's just this show. I hope it means even remotely what it means to me to use long term. But it's like it's just you've got so much great TV in front of you. I mean, you have 200 plus episodes of MASH that you may have not ever seen. It's just. I hope they're as great as I perceive them, and I'm sure as Anthony perceives them. It's just it's amazing to think what you have coming for the first time.
Scott, it's important for me to know, and for anyone out there listening, for you to know that there have been several scenes and episodes that have stuck with me long after viewing, that have made their way, ingrained themselves in my lifestyle. So it's already made an effect. So.
The very shadowy promise I keep making to Ethan that he does not understand, but he will, is Ethan, you will learn to have an unnecessarily strong emotional response to Mozart's clarinet quintet in A minor. Keep dropping little hints to him, like, hey, you know this like mundane thing? You're going to feel real sad whenever you think about it. Why? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just will.
Well, yeah, there's TV shows you probably watch. Like I know they've made references on Scrubs, Third Rock. There's a lot of stuff where they've actually made references to the show in pop culture where unless you've seen it, you wouldn't even get it. I mean, there's one I remember. There was a 30 Rock with Alan Alda where he made a reference towards something that's coming, very long down the road. And I don't know. I mean, it was 40 something years. Like I don't know if everybody even would know what he was saying, but like to a MASH fan, it was pure gold. It was like that's amazing that he was able to slip that in. But yeah, it has long lasting effects. So, I mean, just like example, like for you watching these for the first time, like I was driving my son home and he heard Freebird for the first time. Like, I can't even imagine. I mean, think of hearing Freebird for the first time ever. I mean, everybody's heard it a thousand, but they're playing the guitar solo, which goes on for a while. And he's like, why do they keep playing the guitar? I'm like, buddy, this ain't even the start of it. It's going to keep going and going. And, you know, it's those kind of things that, you know, if you could do it for the first time again, it was fun to see his reaction, you know, to it and just realize that this is, I was trying to explain how famous this song is, but yeah, just awesome stuff.
Well, let's wrap this up. We've been, again, this will not be an 8-hour episode. This will not be an 8-hour episode.
I have to beat Mike. I have to beat him.
Let's hop over to the Patreon and grab a couple of the comments over there.
Did any of us actually give our number ratings for this?
We did not. You're right. I sidetracked. So while I'm pulling up the Patreon, what would you guys rate For Want of a Boot out of 5?
Guest first, Ethan, please.
Okay, well, like I said, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. I love the episode. Obviously, that's why I'm on. I think it's got some great jokes, some long term, even, you know, our Dennis, who only see one time, just the all falling apart at the end. That alone was worth the 25 minutes, but some great acting. You get to see all the main characters. We get to see Zell for the first time. And I love this formula. I love this on MASH and just throughout TV, just because it's fun to see characters just interact and what they're willing to do just to get an insignificant thing as a boot. So 4 out of 5, mm-hmm, for me.
Nice. Ethan?
I'm at a 3.8. It's a very funny episode. I thought a lot of good acting. I don't know. I had this horrible time. I know I nitpicked it a little bit, but it's an enjoyable episode, and it's like Scott said earlier. It's one of those things, like, I would turn this on just to have in the background while I was doing stuff, and, you know, just enjoy the laughs. But 3.8 for me.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you, Ethan. 3.8. I it's a solid episode. It's good. It's funny. It's, again, one of the best kind of examples, for lack of a better word, of the early season kind of method and vibe and way of approaching things. And yeah, solid 3.8 for me as well. Hopping over to the Patreon, as always, thank you to the people who are lovely and awesome and support us over there. You help the podcast pay for itself. And as I alluded to earlier, there is something fun and exciting hopefully coming soon. Ethan and I got to hammer out a couple more details, but I'll give you a hint. Scott mentioned that, you know, no one is selling MASH stuff anymore. Well, maybe that may be changing. We will see. Keep your eye on the Patreon. And for those of you who are not on Patreon, don't worry. It'll be coming to you eventually as well. Thank you very much to Private Stuart Boyles, Private Carrie Ahern, Private Jared Gallagher, Sergeant Timothy Burleson, Sergeant Luis Black, Lieutenant Mike Jameson, and Lieutenant Leanne. Thank you all very much. Once again, you help the podcast pay for itself, and your patronage will soon be rewarded. A couple of comments, and we'll wrap up and get out of here, if my internet will let me here, please. Don't make this awkward. Thank you. Stuart Boyle says, this is one of the more hijinks ensue episodes. The payoff is okay. He prefers the episodes that make you think a little before you making you laugh. But again, it's a solid 3. Frank and Margaret can kick sand. He says, is that his sign-off? That might have to be his sign-off. Frank and Margaret can kick sand. Mike Jameson says, strangely, for such a well-known episode, this one always blends into the background for me, and that's not a shot at it, because it's got some great lines and performances, except for the concept, it doesn't stand out. 3.2 martinis out of 5, and it gets the extra 0.2 for, quote, biggest horses patoot in the army, because I'm one and he's never at the meetings. I forgot that line was in there, and it was their hatred that fooled me. I forgot to bring up some of the great lines in there, but
I had actually wrote that line down. It was the hatred that
It was their hatred that fooled me.
Fooled me, yeah. There's some really good one-liners in there that, yeah, you know, you kind of miss. And the one with the them and doing the announcement over looking for a wife for the guy that's going on to, like, Tokyo yes. or whatever. Yeah, that's a really good one, too.
Yeah, sophomore, you know, 15-year-old Anthony back when he first had a Facebook account and you could, like, put, you know, the Captain Alvin Mercer is going on his honeymoon to Tokyo. Any nurse willing to be the bride, please. You know, that was a quote that was absolutely on edgy 14-year-old Anthony's Facebook profile at one point. I forgot that the because I'm one and he's never at the meetings. That is a story for, let's see, what episode are we on? 17. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. In about 5 episodes, I've got a story that goes along with that line, but we will have to wait and discuss that. Let's hop very quickly over to the hell site known as Twitter. No, I will not call it X until Elon Musk pays for my own for me to have my own house.
I do love that you call it the hell site.
The hell site known as Twitter, which is unfortunate because it is the most active site where we get communications about the podcast, because Facebook is dead and no one wants to admit it, and all the other sites are really bad for, like,
yeah,
person-to-person communication. So
that's something about Twitter, is like, it's instantaneous. I mean, you can get stuff communicated so quickly. That's its capping its feathers, that nothing can go faster than Twitter. So
Bella Sissa says 4.0. Some of my favorite episodes are the extreme weather ones. It's one of the few episodes where Hawkeye's scheming completely fails, and it's fun to watch it fall apart. Donate Eater says 4.3, an enjoyable episode. Fun to see how far Hawkeye is willing to take the chain of deals, with Frank's birthday party being where he nearly draws the line. 4.2 from Big Beard Booty Daddy. When I first watched the series years ago, this was one of my least favorite episodes, but the more I watch it, the more it's grown on me over the years. I enjoy the barter and trade aspect and how everything falls apart at the end, thanks to Frank. Again, Paul Mitchell, probably my favorite line of the entire episode. The sun smiles, the river laughs, can't help loving that man of mine. yeah. So yeah, overall good episode. Yeah. Nothing more to say about it. We're glad we had you, Scott. It's been a long time in the making. I know you probably already have a short list of episodes for every season at this point. But
I will gladly join you anytime. It's been amazing. I truly, truly, truly appreciate you guys having me on. It's, like I say, I could talk about MASH forever and ever. It's that kind of show. And I see you've got some great ones. You're actually A Smattering of Intelligence actually premiered today. So the final for this season actually came out today, 40-something years ago. So, you got some good ones coming up too. Crisis. There's a couple other ones that are going to be some really good episodes, season two.
Yep. We got a couple guests potentially lined up for them, so I'm excited. But our next episode is, Ethan alluded to, Stuart Margolin. You're such a great actor, but you're in two of the shittiest MASH episodes. Next episode is Nose Job.
I assume nobody asked to be on that one.
You know, weirdly enough, no one did. But that reminds me, the episode after that is Chosen People. I got to reach out to our favorite half Korean Tyler and see if he's would consent to be on an episode again. And then, yeah, like you said, we got Crisis. We have someone who wants to come on and talk about that. And we are rapidly approaching the end of season two. So very, very exciting. Again, Scott, thank you for being here. Ethan, do you have any words of, I won't say wisdom, but do you have any words to finish up this podcast with?
The sun has smiled this day upon the soul that shifts the river into life.
I didn't know where that was going.
Thank you for ending on a deep note like that. I appreciate it.
It's deep. So deep. And I'm just going to add Shemison guitar strums behind that. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
The time has come for us to say sayonara.